We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and we're up to a touchy subject. It's called marriage and religion. You can understand that religion can pose a very big strain on a relationship. Imagine the following scenario, which has happened many times. A couple gets married, and the morning after the wedding, so you have to imagine the couple got home late, and until they went to sleep and everything, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, so they don't exactly wake up on time, right? So the wife notices that her husband isn't going to minyan. She wonders, hey, I thought I married an observant guy. Doesn't he go to minyan? And to add salt to injury, day two after they're married, he's oversleeping again. And again, she sees him putting on talis and tefillin, and it's not what she was expecting. So more than once, I've received emails from kalas during the 7 days of celebration, during the Sheva Brachos, where they say, what am I supposed to do with this? I married this guy, I thought he was sincere, and the guy is davening at home. So I want to get back to that story in a few minutes. First, let's hear another story about Hillel. We have 6 orders, what's called Shisha Sidre Shas of Mishnah. And then we have tractates, what are called the minor tractates, Masechtot Ktanot, which encompass some topics that are not really covered in the 6 orders. So I'll just give you the names. You should be familiar with them. We have a tractate in the small, and the minor tractates called Avos to Rabbi Nosson. It's like Pirkei Avos. It's like the tractate of Avos, only it has 41 chapters, as opposed to Pirkei Avos has 5. We have a tractate called Masechet Sofrim, all about the laws of writing, Sefer Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzos. We have a tractate called Avel, a tractate called Smachos, a tractate all about the laws of mourning. So we call it the tractate of happiness. We don't want to call it the tractate of mourning. And then we have a tractate called Kala, the laws of being a mensch, behaving properly. And the tractate is also called Maseches Derech Eretz, the laws of how a person should behave. So if we open up Maseches Derech Eretz to the 4th chapter, what? They printed them in the back of the Talmud at the end of the order of Nezikin, after Avodah Zarah and Arios, where you have Pirkei Avos, so they printed the minor tractates. There's a Maseches Gerim. There's a Maseches Avadim. Yes. Avos to Rabbi Nosson and Sofrim, the tractate of scribes. What? This is not really from the Mishnah. These are what are called the minor tractate. Let's see. So we have over here a story in Maseches Derech Eretz. There's a wonderful story, which I think we'll learn at length a different time. Okay, we'll learn the first story first. I'll learn the first story first. Give me just 1 second, because in this tractate, the chapters are a little bit in a different order than the one I have. Uh, Okay, I'll tell you the story, but they changed the order here, so I don't have it inside. Okay. I'm not finding it here now. So the first story that's quoted in this chapter, Le'olam tehe na'ebich nisatcha v'ne'ebich tziyatcha. A person should always be pleasant the way they enter and the way they leave. And minimize your investment in business so that you can invest in learning Torah. The following story is about Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. In other versions it says Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. He was coming for the break. He had just been learning. And he was going out for a breeze on the beach. And there's a wonderful ride as he's going down the beach. And a man approaches him who was very disgusting. So imagine a person that's completely deformed approaching the rabbi. Our sages say that the man who approached him was really Eliyahu Hanavi, who got dressed up to teach him a lesson. And he approached him as though, who are you? And the rabbi had just come out of his learning and he looked down at the guy and he said, he said, what an empty person, how disgusting are the children of Avraham Avinu. Amarlo, so this person who was deformed said back to him, said, you know what, I can't change it. But you have a point. I was created disgusting. Do me a favor. Go to the one who made me this way and talk to him about it. If you have a complaint, I want you to post the complaint with the one who formed me this way. Now, what's he supposed to say now? He realizes, hey, I'm wrong. He quickly came off his donkey. Threw him down before him. He says, you know, I was wrong. I shouldn't have spoken to you that way. Forgive me. He says, no, I'm not forgiving you till you go to the one, to the architect who formed me this way and tell him, go talk to the one who made me this way. Tell him what a disgusting thing you created. So they're walking for 9 minutes. And he keeps asking him, will you forgive me? And he says, no. And he says, forgive me. And he says, no. And the people of the city come out to greet the rabbi. They hear the rabbi's coming to town. So the whole city comes out to greet him. He was a big rabbi. And they come out and they say, peace upon you, rabbi. So there's this deformed person walking next to him. And he turns to the people of the city and he says, who are you calling rabbi? So they said to the guy who's walking behind you for whatever reason. So he said, if that's a rabbi, then the Jewish people shouldn't have many. I wish us we shouldn't have people like that. So they said, God forbid, what did he do to you? So he told them. So here, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon said a nasty word to the guy, and the guy's embarrassing him in front of everyone. He tells them, look, he said to me, what a disgusting creature. God's creatures are so disgusting. The sons of Avraham Avinu are so disgusting. So the people turned to this man and said, but forgive him. He made a mistake. Forgive him. And finally, he forgave him. He said, on condition, he doesn't do it again. And he walked away. Now, in other texts, Eliyahu Hanavi reveals to us the secret that it was him. It wasn't a real person. It was really Eliyahu coming to take him off his high horse, literally and figuratively. So they honor him. They say, Rabbi, you finally came to town. Come give a speech. So the whole town is waiting. He gets up and gives the following speech. He says, a person should always be soft like a reed and not tough like the cedar tree. The cedar tree is very impressive. It looms over everyone. But if a strong wind can come, it can knock it down on its face. The reed seems like it's nothing. It constantly seems to be pushed around. It can be pushed north and south and east and west. The waves keep pushing it. But you know what? No wind in the world can uproot it. And in the end, when we write a Sefer Torah, we don't take a branch from the cedar tree. We take from that humble reed to write the Sefer Torah. So that was the speech he gave. He said, you know, the lesson I just learned, that we have to value humility. So a man came here, I should have spoken to him differently. I was wrong. So that's the first story here. Yes?
Does this also apply to all things besides humility? Like, for example, I was reading the book about the reason, there's a theory, the reason why the people last so long was because of, like, submissiveness.
I don't know. I think there's a balanced approach. But I'm saying in a nutshell, we have to value humility. Whether to what degree we should take it, that's something we'll be studying throughout the year. So we move forward. So we're going to get back to that story, but I want to go on to the story of Hillel. So the story of Hillel is as follows. Hillel was the prince. Initially, Hillel was very poor. Hillel went down to Babylon to study Torah under Shmaya and Avtalion. The rest of the people were in Israel. He didn't ascend to Israel till after his rabbeim, till after his rabbis passed away. Then he came to Israel, and then they realized that he knew more than everyone else, so they appointed him the leader, and then he became wealthy. His whole life he lived in poverty as a student. And only after he was appointed leader, so then he became very wealthy. So Hillel was a man of importance. Hillel was always very, very humble. And the Braisa in Maseches Derech Eretz tells us the following story. That one time Hillel had a guest coming home, and his wife knew he was coming home with a guest. And they come in, and they sit down, let's say in the living room. And Hillel's wife goes to the back room to bring the food. And he's talking with the guests. They're hungry. They've made up to come home to eat. So 5 minutes pass. And when they walked in, they could smell there was fresh bread and meat. And everything was ready. And as they're sitting there, a half hour passes. And they hear his wife cluttering around in the kitchen. And an hour passes. And an hour and a half passes. And almost 2 hours pass before she comes out with freshly baked bread and freshly baked cooked meat. So Hillel asks her, what happened? My beloved, he calls her my beloved, BT. That was their term for my beloved. What happened? So she says, well, when you walked through the door, I had all the food ready. And I went to the back room to get the food. And someone knocked on the door in the back room. I opened the door. There was a poor man standing there. And he said to me, I'm getting married today, and I have no food to bring my bride. I have nothing. So I took all the food I prepared you, the bread, the meat. I gave it all to him, and I started from scratch. I kneaded dough. I baked the bread. I cooked the meat. I started everything from scratch, and here you have a fresh meal. So this story teaches us a lot, because imagine yourself walking into the house very hungry with an important guest. Wouldn't you think to tell your wife, well, don't you think I come first? I'm very sorry. Why shouldn't he wait till you bake and cook and give him the food? You had it already. I have a guest here, right? I can imagine that many people would say that. And you know what? If you say that twice or three times, by the fourth time your wife knows what you're going to say, and more than likely she won't do that mitzvah. So sometimes we have to stop and think, because we have to realize that our observance of mitzvot is going to stem from our humility. This is where we have to tie in the stories together. When Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon gave that speech, you better be willing to shift. You better be like that reed. He was talking about his own mistake. That means to be accepting of things that are bothersome to us. Sometimes in the name of religion, a person comes into the house and he holds a tough line. And our sages say, That is the way to ensure that your house will be a sinful house. Because what happens if the wife is standing there and the poor man comes knocking on the door? Is she going to give him the food? Or is she going to say, I'm not going to deal with his anger. I'm very sorry. This food is ready for my husband. I can't give you anything right now. Yeah, I know you're a groom. I know you need the food. Here's the flour and water and the meat. You cook it. I can't. Ah, but Hillel's wife did the mitzvos because she knew her husband had the patience. And when she did it, when she told him the story, the Midrash continues and tells us, what did Hillel answer her? He said to her, I judged you favorably all along. I was just curious what it was. I didn't think for a second you did anything bad. He told her all along what I was thinking was, you must have had a mitzvah. There must be something positive you were busy with. If it's taking you 2 hours, there must be something amazing you're doing. Blessed are you. So then Hillel could be ensured that next time such a challenge comes up, this is what he's going to do. The Talmud says, we have a Mishnah, we say it every Shabbos. You have a responsibility as a husband. Comes Friday afternoon, there are three questions you're supposed to ask. Anyone know what those three questions are? Yeah, what are...
Did you set the Erev?
Eravtem, did you set up the Erev? Esartem, did you tithe? Is the food ready? And Hadliku Asaner. It's time to light candles. So in every house, and it doesn't matter if Shabbos comes in at 8 o'clock at night or at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, there's always pressure the last half hour, hour, 2 hours. The last minutes before Shabbos, there's always pressure. And the Mishnah says it's your responsibility to help out and ensure that they light on time. Comes the Gemara and says, but you better say it calmly. If you're going to say, did you do it? And please, it's time to light. You have to say it patiently, lovingly. You have to have helped to get there. And the Gemara says, one of the Amoraim says, I never heard this. No one ever taught me I'm supposed to say it patiently and calmly and lovingly. There's a Tanoi quote that says it, and I never learned it. But I figured it out myself. The problem is that very often people don't figure it out themselves. Very often people think that the way to ensure the house is going to be observant is by being very tough about religion. And the Talmud says it's the exact opposite. When people are tough about religion, what ends up happening is that people are, the wife and the children, are scared of the father. They're not respectful of God. How many times is the woman standing there and she looks at her watch, and it's 2 minutes after sunset, and she did not light the candles. Now, she has a very big challenge. There's a biblical prohibition to light those candles, and there's a husband who's going to walk through that door and say the candles aren't lit from Shabbos. Which is scarier? You know what the Talmud says? The Talmud says the husband's scarier. Talmud says you can have the most pious wife, but if you're going to instill fear in the house, if you're going to yell about religion, if you're going to make religion a pressured item within the relationship, so then you should know that what will end up happening is the house will be sinning behind your back. Because God forbid you should walk through that door and the candles aren't lit. So she'll say, maybe my watch is off by 2 minutes, and she'll figure out some kind of excuse and light those candles. Did she do the right move or the wrong move? Our sages say, don't expect different. If you have the patience, like Hillel taught us, then she'll have the confidence to do what's right. If there's pressure revolving religion within the house, so it goes the other way around. Now, I'm going to tell you something I am uncomfortable telling you, and you'll be uncomfortable hearing, but you have to hear it. In general, when people do tshuva, when people are chozrim b'tshuva, this is probably the most difficult point in running a house. People have a doubt. How do I do this? How am I going to have a house which on the one hand is observant, and on the other hand, religion is not a pressured item in the house? It's difficult. You should know it is one of your top challenges in married life. But you have to be focused on it and work on it. Work on it together. Religion has to be a pleasant thing. And what happens if you see your spouse, your husband did not get up for Shacharis? Now let's get back to the story we began with. When I get an email from a kala that says, hey, my husband didn't go to Shacharis the last 3 days of Sheva Brachos. We're married 3 days. 3 days he's been davening at home. What am I supposed to think? I am very bothered by that email. Why am I bothered? Firstly, because the husband's right. Halachically, when you get married, there's a halacha that you're not supposed to leave your wife alone. You're not supposed to leave her alone at home. So if she wants to schlep out of bed and come with you to shul, so then you could go to shul. But if, like most people, she's tired in the morning, you've had sheva brachos at night, so then you're supposed to daven at home. So firstly, the husband's in the right. He's done nothing wrong. But that's what very often happens. Very often people have issues about things that are really non-issues. How many times are people bothered over little things that really make no difference? It's not that this is right and this is wrong. Let's take another example. I thought my husband's going to be very religious and wear his tzitzis hanging out. And he keeps his tzitzis tucked in. Why is he embarrassed to be a Jew? Wait a second. There are two opinions in halacha. One opinion says it's right to leave him out. The other opinion says it's wrong to leave him out. So maybe he's doing right. We're sitting there at my parents' house and it's Rosh Hashanah. And they bring us the apple dipped in honey. And everyone else knows to say the Yehi Ratzon. May we have a blessed year. May we have a sweet year. And then they make the blessing and eat the apple. My husband, he makes the blessing. Borei Pri Eitz. And he doesn't eat the apple. He says, Yiratzon Sheniske L'Shana Tovo Metuka. And then he eats the apple. Doesn't he know that he's just destroyed his blessing? If you talk in between making a blessing and eating the apple, then the blessing is disqualified. Oh, is that a good argument? No. Most opinions in halacha say that. She's right. But there is an opinion that says the other way. There is a custom the other way. So what he's doing is kosher. There are opinions this way. There are opinions that way. My husband, when they bring the shechiyonu fruit to the table, he makes a blessing, ala eitz, and then a shechiyonu, and then he takes a bite out of the food. Also, it's true, the Mishnah Brura does say you should make the shechiyonu either before the eitz or after your first bite, not in between the blessing and eating the food. But others say differently. And there are two customs in the world. So is he doing something wrong? There are two customs. And there are two kosher customs. So she went to seminary, or she went to Upana, or she had a teacher who told her, this is the kosher way to do things. But maybe there's another kosher way to do things? So the first issue I have is that people assume, and husbands assume as well. Today, a guy asked, if a couple wants to make aliyah, the husband or the wife wants to make aliyah, and the spouse does not want to come to Israel. This question was not asked here, not by anyone you guys know. So the halacha says, no, just telling you, this wasn't asked here. So the halacha says that a spouse can force their spouse, right? The halacha says that the one who wants to make aliyah is in the right, and therefore within the marriage we expect the other one to give in. So do we ever rule that way? No. Because practically, to destroy a home, the damage it would cause to both and their children is so great that that's not the question. If you have a wife that comes and says, I really don't feel like making aliyah, I like it out here in Brooklyn and Bar Park and who knows where, what do I need to do this for? So you tell her, look, the right thing is a Jew belongs in Israel. Yes, if your husband wants to go, you should go with him. But to the point of forcing her. So the husband says, but the halacha's on my side. But that's not how you run a house. House is first built on peace, on understanding, on acceptance. And we don't breathe down one another's back. So just like you wouldn't like it if your wife gets up in the morning and says, hey buddy, you know what a shul looks like? It's there the rest of the week, not just Shabbos. Why don't you go check it out? You wouldn't be too comfortable getting such a line. Well, she doesn't want to hear from you that when she makes her benching, it should take a little bit longer than 30 seconds. None of your business. Live and let live. She comes out of the bathroom and you go, oh, where's that Asher Yotzar? Excuse me. No one can live in a situation where you feel like someone's breathing down your back. You can't. And then you look at her and you say, you told me you want to lead an observant life. You know, I thought you'd want the reminder. Yeah, but honey, you're reminding me every 2 minutes. And you'll tell her, but why do I have to remind you every 2 minutes? And then the question is it any of your business? And then the question is, but don't you want to be observant? And the answer is to God and not to you. Okay? We cannot use religion as a power play. We cannot use it as a point of tension. And if what we're really interested in is observance of mitzvot, then the way to get there is with love, understanding, and patience. And the Talmud says it. It's not me. We have the story of Hillel. We have the Talmud in Tractate Shabbos about the questions. Here the Mishnah says, ask these questions in your house Friday afternoon. Along comes the Talmud and says, no one said yell. No one said ask in a demanding, threatening way. No, ask in a patient, kind, loving way. You know, there's a famous story about a guy who was illiterate. And his son was in a faraway town and he kept sending his son money. And one day his son sends him a letter and he can't read it. And he goes to neighbor number one and he says, can you read me this letter? So the neighbor opens the letter and he says, yeah, the letter says, Dad, things are really tough. Send me money. Here's your letter. The father looks at the letter. The guy says, well, my son became such a bum. That's how he talks to me. No, I'm not sending him a dime. He goes back home all upset and he tells his wife, our son became a bum. I don't know. I'm not sending him a penny. A week passes and the wife tells him, look, he's never, ever written to you like that. But you never, ever went to that neighbor to read his letters. Maybe he reads them funny. Go to the neighbor you always go to. Ask him to read the letter. So he says, fine. He takes the letter and he goes to that neighbor. And that neighbor opens the letter and he says, oh, boy. He says, what happened? He says, you know what your son wrote you? He says, no, what did my son write? He says, your son wrote, Dad, it's really tough. Send me money. He said, that's what the poor boy wrote? Of course I'm going to send him money. Same words. It's just a question of what the tone is. So, right? So one neighbor reads it this way and one neighbor reads it that way. And the poor guy thinks that's what the letter says. We have halacha. It's true. We try to lead an observant life. Firstly, it's not our job to look over our spouse's back. Secondly, we do it lovingly. We have to read that letter with the right intonations. There's a couple that lives in this neighborhood, a very famous couple, where the husband is very famous. You've all heard of him. And he's a nice person. But he doesn't keep Shabbos. I don't know if he keeps kashrut. And his wife is super observant. And their daughters are also super observant. It's famous. I don't like saying it because I feel like... I don't think it's Lashon Hara because I think half the world knows. But it's still, you know, we don't have to look for leniencies in the laws of Lashon Hara. So we'll leave it anonymous. But it's someone who's world-renowned. I'm saying this person is a world-known figure. And he lives a five-minute walk from here. I'm not going to say what he does. but it's amazing that you can have a couple where he's probably watching TV on Shabbos and she's going to shul with the kids. But it just shows you how two people who have chosen to lead a life together and then one decides they're going to be observant and the other one says, fine, you know, but that has nothing to do with me. They can be respectful.
Do you think that's correct?
I think that it's a beautiful thing. I think it's... if you ask me, do you look for a wife that way? No. That's what I said. This isn't a dating class. But if a couple is married and suddenly there's a gap, suddenly one of them wants to be more to one way or the other way, that doesn't mean you can't be respectful. The two can build together. And the beauty is that now they've already married off their kids. I don't even know if they have any single kids left at home. And they're still married. Sometimes you think they're just holding it together to keep, you know, to let the kids have a normal life. No.
And the kids were all dodgy.
Correct. So the fact that a person is in the tshuva process and then they get married only means we have to be more sensitive, to be more respectful, to give more space to our spouse. We're striving for the same thing. And if there's a gap between us, so we have to be respectful. That's one of the reasons why I recommend that you find a rabbi who has experience with people who are chozrim b'tshuva. Because the answer you're supposed to get is not going to be the same as two FFBs. From birth. So then there are certain things that are given. A guy calls up the rabbi and says, my wife doesn't want to cover her hair. So that's a problematic thing. Technically, the halacha is that a married woman should cover her hair. But if you understand that she's fighting to hold on to kashrus and Shabbos, okay, so covering her hair, let's find the compromise she's comfortable with. You know, there's what to talk. What's compromise? I hope you won't need it. But you have my number. I think that that involves understanding the parties involved and seeing how to work with them. Part of halacha is also education, seeing how a person grows. So let's recap what we discussed today. We began with which story? We began with the woman who was very upset at her husband who wasn't going to Minyan. And we came back to that and understood that halachically, technically he was right. And very often we're upset at something where the other party has halachic backing. There's more than one understanding in halacha. There's more than one approach. And even if the other party's wrong, that doesn't mean it's my job to be what we call in Hebrew there, mashgiach. In married life, I'm not supposed to watch over the other party. I have to give them their space for ups and downs. We strive together, but we have to give one another space for ups and downs, and we don't have to comment. Then we discussed the story of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and that man. And Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon had learned so much, and when he saw the man, he reacted in an inconsiderate way, and he spent the next 10 minutes begging him for forgiveness, and then was shamed publicly until finally he came up and gave the speech. The key is to be humble, to be flexible, to be like the reed, not to be like the cedar tree. You could learn a lot, but that doesn't mean you should be looking down at people. On the contrary, the humble reed is what's used for writing a Sefer Torah, and that's applied within the home. We saw from that story, the next story of Hillel, whose wife kept him waiting for 2 hours, and he told her, all along I judged you favorably. I didn't doubt it for a minute. I was just curious what it was, but you should be blessed. That was a great move. We said that very often the observance level of the house is defined based on the husband, based on how patient the husband is, how understanding the husband is. That's where you have a role. Your role is to give the tone, and your role is to give the patience and love and understanding, so that when a woman is pressured to light Shabbos candles, she'll know that if it's 2 minutes past sundown, she shouldn't light those Shabbos candles, and you will bless her when you come home. You won't be upset at her. We discussed the Mishnah in Tractate Shabbos about the three things that are a man's responsibility to help with, and then to ask to ensure that they're done, and then the Talmud, which says they should be asked patiently. And we discussed the halacha about a husband or wife who can force their hand about making aliyah, and that's not really practical. That's a perspective. But halachically, practically, we work together, we build together. And then we discussed the example of a couple where there were huge gaps between them. There are huge gaps between them, but they can still lead a peaceful life because they respect one another, and each one gives the other one space. And out of respect, out of mutual respect, they can build a loving, peaceful home. Yes. But I think someone else was waiting first.
Yeah.
Yaakov? Yeah.
I was wondering, I know it's not the dating class, but in general, do you want to try to find, do you want to match up your religion or those of your life before?
We'll discuss it at length in the dating class, but in general, when you're dating, you definitely want someone who shares perspective and observance level and anticipated observance level with you. Meaning, you want to share perspective, you want to be at a similar place, and you want to be looking forward and trying to head in the same direction. All that being said, life is dynamic.
If someone is
Chozer v'Teshuva
and they're...
No. Yaakov, either Thursday night or dating. This is not a dating class. Yes. Thursday night. We can discuss this. If you want to discuss it, so that I'll tell you. It deserves long answers. I'm saying I gave you a short answer, which is really inaccurate. If you go to the dating series online, you could see we have a whole class on this topic of how a chozer b'tshuva who can fluctuate, how do they find the right match? So that's it's a broad topic. It's not doing justice to try and stick it into 2 minutes now.